News Services Division of Akashwani presents Northeast Diary.
Good evening and welcome to this edition of Northeast Diary. As we explore the fascinating northeastern part of India, each episode offers new insights and captivating stories. Here is a sneak peek at what we have in store for you today. We will take you through the customs and culture of the Khasi tribe from Meghalaya. We also bring you a report on the growing challenge of the human-elephant conflict amidst the serene landscapes and rich biodiversity of Wokha, Nagaland. But first, let's head to Meghalaya, where the 162nd death anniversary of the revered freedom fighter Yu Kiang Nangba was recently commemorated. The event, held on December 30th, took place at Mingkhoi Pirde Longpia and was organized by Senrei Jowai. Here is a report.
Meghalaya's governor, C.H. Vijayashankar, attended the ceremony to honor the courageous Panar leader, Yu Kiang Nangba, who led a rebellion against British colonial forces. In his speech, the governor reflected on Nangba's rise from humble beginnings to leading the Jaintia community in 1862.
It is an honor to stand before you today to pay tribute to a true hero of our land, Yu Kiang Nangba. He rose from humble beginnings to become the leader of the Jaintia community during 1862. He being a freedom fighter who challenged the mighty British Empire. His courage and determination to defend, preserve and protect the religious and cultural rights of the Nar people are a source of immense pride for all of us.
Vijayashankar praised Nangba's indomitable spirit in defending not only the political autonomy of the people, but also their religious and cultural values. He highlighted that the uprising was not just a fight for political freedom, but also a struggle to preserve sacred traditions and identity.
This rebellion was not only about a political resistance, but also about protecting the sacred traditions, cultural and moral values, which defines our identity. Yu Kiang Nangba, the leadership especially in the face of diversity and adversity, is a tremendous example of sacrifice and unity among us. His legacy continues to inspire us today to protect and preserve our culture and remind us of the importance of standing firm when we face the challenges.
The governor stressed the importance of remembering this history and safeguarding traditions for future generations, saying, "Those who do not know history cannot create history." Let us continue to honor Kiang Nangba's memory by preserving our traditions. Speaking at the event, Dr. Omar Lin Kendia, assistant professor at St. Edmund's College, Shillong, who has a deep interest in the history of the Khasi Panar community, emphasized the significant role Kiang Nangba played in the resistance against British colonial rule. He explained that despite limited resources, Nangba led an uprising in 1862 that united the tribes of the Jaintia Hills against British imposed taxes and interference with their customs.
The source of history of Kiang Nangba and the Jaintia resistance movement 1860-1862 consists of mostly of the internal and the external accounts. The internal accounts can be traced mainly through the param, or literally the stories. The external accounts are mostly the British records. However, when it comes to the life and the struggle of Kiang Nangba, we have to rely mostly on both the account, where the oral accounts also cannot be ignored. According to the oral traditions, Ukyanangba was born to Kerimai Nangba at Peple, a locality in Juai. However, the exact date of his birth is unknown, but it is said that he was a child when the British annexed the Jaintia Kingdom in 1835. He belonged to the lineage of the Sokpok clan. The information on the life of Kyanangba can be accounted both from the internal and the external account. It is said that Kyanangba was a farmer. Kyanangba, in his reply to the proceeding in the case of Kyanangba Charter Rebellion, in his reply to Brigadier Dunsford, he said, "I shall speak the whole truth, though I am hanged for it. I am neither a Daloy nor a Pator. I have attended to my fields. In the cold season, I have traded with the Mikir." From this reply of Kyanangba, we can know that Kyanangba is a farmer, and during the winter, he traded with the Mikir Hill. Though very young at the time of annexation, he was greatly disturbed by the high-handedness policy of the Britishers. So the spirit of patriotism in Kyanangba was inspired by the development and the story of his uncle, Usajar Nangba, who fought against the British at a place called Chan Mersiam.
Dr. Kendia further mentioned that Kyanangba's courage in battle earned him a prominent place in Meghalaya's history, even though the rebellion was eventually suppressed.
The British annexed the plain portion of the Jaintia Kingdom in 1835. For more than two decades, the British adopt a policy of least interference. They left the Jaintia to themselves. However, from 1860 onward, the British attempted on many occasions to impose authority and to make the Jaintias submissive to the authority and to acknowledge the supremacy of the British government. This anti-British feeling started when the British India government attempted to impose taxes and interfere with the custom and the religion of the Jaintia. They have gone to the extent of preventing the cremations of the dead. They have gone to the extent of snatching the swords and the shield of the Paste at the Yalong. This act of the British made the Jaintia furious and led to the convince of a Dalwar Karadoloi at a place called Suntuksir, where Kyanangba was elected as a leader to lead the Jaintia rebellion against the British. Kyanangba could not remain indifferent to the plight of his people, so he took up the leadership of the rebellion in January 1862 and waged a war against the colonial ruler. However, during the fight, Kyanangba fell ill and retreated to Umkara, where he was captured on the 27 December 1862 and hanged at Yamusiang, a marketplace in Juai, on the 30th December 1862.
The freedom fighter was captured on December 27th, 1862, and executed 3 days later, on December 30th. Legend has it that Nangba's last words were, "If my face turns eastward when I die on the rope, we shall be free again within 100 years. If it turns westward, we shall be enslaved forever." Remarkably, his prophecy came true as India gained independence within 100 years of his execution. Wu Kyung Nangba's legacy continues to inspire, symbolizing the courage and determination of people who fought against insurmountable odds. His contribution remains an enduring part of Meghalaya's history. This is Lipika Das with Langfrang Nangspong reporting for Northeast Diary from Akashvani News, Shillong.
In Nagaland, the serene landscapes of Bokha, known for its rich biodiversity, are facing a growing challenge, the human-elephant conflict. Bokha, covering an area of just 1,628 square kilometers, is home to an estimated 160 to 180 elephants, according to the 2017 census. For years, the people of Bokha and the elephants living in its forests have struggled to coexist. With no effective solution in sight, the conflict continues to threaten both livelihood and wildlife. We now turn to our Nagaland correspondent, Yohano Murray, for more details.
For the villages under Bokha, the conflict is devastating. From paddy fields to rubber plantations, sugarcane to vegetables, farmers are facing significant losses as elephants consume their crops. For the community, elephants have always been an issue, but for the past 3 to 4 years, the issue has been escalating. VDP Secretary of Changka Village, Sensadi Antan, shared more on this.
Human-elephant conflict has been a major threat for the people of Changka and other surrounding villages. It describes negative interaction between human and wild elephants. Human-elephant conflict can take the toll both on human life and properties as well as elephants' population. Human-elephant conflict is also a major conservation concern in elephant habitat areas like Changka. It remains pervasive as the majority of existing strategies are driven by site-specific factors that only offer short-term solution, while mitigation strategies frequently transfer conflict risks from one place to another. Long-term resolution of human-elephant conflict and promotion of peaceful coexistence requires a simultaneous focusing of management effort on site-specific considerations as well as the formulation and application of strategic plans at a landscape level that directly address underlying anthropogenic drivers and the spatio-temporal variation. The most common forms of human-elephant conflicts are crop raiding, property destruction, or simply people getting too close to elephant and triggering defensive behaviors that may lead to injury or death of human and wild elephant as well. These conflicts endanger not only people's safety and elephant survival, but also the health of ecosystem. In a village like Changka, we face this conflict at least twice or thrice a year, and this cripple agricultural activities of the people, which can have a grave repercussions in the long run.
Despite the challenges faced, the State Forest Department has initiated steps to address the crisis, including a state action plan that has been drafted and submitted for approval. The plan aims to provide an amicable solution for both humans and elephants, relying heavily on the community cooperation. The human-elephant conflict in Bokha highlights the balance needed to coexist with wildlife. While conservation efforts are underway, the situation also remains challenging. As both sides struggle for survival, it is clear that collaboration, innovative solutions, and a deeper understanding of the shared environment are crucial to resolving the crisis. For Northeast Diary, this is Yohana Murray, Akashwani News, Kohima.
Now let's embark on a fascinating journey to explore the rich customs and vibrant culture of the Khasi tribe. Nestled in the lush hills of Meghalaya in northeastern India, the Khasi people boast a unique blend of traditions, language and way of life. From their matrilineal society to their deeply rooted spiritual beliefs, the Khasi tribe offers a remarkable tapestry of history and heritage. So let's dive into the heart of their culture, unraveling the stories, rituals, and practices that define this incredible community.
So much has been written and talked about one of the major tribes inhabiting the breathtakingly beautiful state of Meghalaya, one of the seven sisters carved out from the erstwhile state, Assam. However, very surprisingly, still not much is known about the people and their great civilization. One fact about the Khasis that is fairly widely known is that they follow the matrilineal system. But it is important that we appreciate the very specific nature of matrilineal among the Khasis. The Khasis trace their origin to the mother ancestress, who they revere as one of the ancestral triad consisting of herself, her husband, and her brother. Descent is traced from the mother's side, and kinship is closer to the maternal than to the paternal side. It is the youngest daughter who takes charge of family properties. She becomes a custodian of her family's wealth and the keeper of religion after the death of her mother. However, male guardianship is crucial. The youngest daughter exercises a custodianship under the supervision of her maternal uncles and brothers. There are many subtly interesting aspects of Khasi Matrilini, but in this brief talk, I wish to focus on some other equally interesting aspects of Khasi society. What makes Khasis remarkable as a people is their resilience, open-mindedness, and belief in values that promote universal harmony with a vision of man, God, and nature held together by a common indwelling spirit. The tradition repeatedly stresses that nature is not a brute fact, but has the immediate aim of guiding human conduct. Critics have, for this very reason, labeled their worldview as primitive paganism. The Khasi argument was simple. If all creatures, including man, was animated by a common indwelling spirit, then no one species could conceivably assume that the whole existed for its benefits alone. They had a living experience of nature and a rich store of knowledge derived from it as they lived peacefully in their land and enjoyed the embrace of nature. This sentiment is expressed beautifully by a Khasi elder called Mauri when he says, "Nature for a Khasi is like a book. The teaching and wisdom he derives from it, he makes use of in his daily life. Nature is also like a big hospital on whose threshold all types of medicine are found, which can heal all bodily ailments. Medicine and reason thus complemented one another. The Khasi was not thus helpless." A profound respect for the natural world was thus embedded in Khasi culture. Indeed, their legends describe mountains, rivers, and rocks as beings who felt, perceived, deliberated, and responded voluntarily as persons. In common with other tribal communities of Northeast India, they were convinced of the possibility of entering into an intimate relationship with any part of physical nature, be it a tree, a mountain, or a river. More significantly, the natural forces or the gods of the Khasi pantheon, in their own way, suggest right actions to mankind. They do not preach, yet they set examples which, if received by man, can be proved true in the singleness of his life. In that sense, nature is not beyond moral categories. A mountain can inspire respect, as also disfavor. Let me very briefly tell you a Khasi story of the fight between two mountain gods. There lived two mountain gods, Unong Sinri in northwest Khasi Hills and Ukumavan in west Khasi Hills, who were similar in shape and height, standing tall and erect, always facing each other with a smile. Above all, the two were great friends. As time passed, Ukumavan's marriage was arranged to a girl as beautiful as the moon. They lived happily and earned the respect of mankind by protecting the people from invaders and other evil forces. On receiving the news one day that his father was critically ill, Ukumavan, the husband, had to hasten to his side. While leaving, he counseled his wife to maintain decorum in his absence and not allow anybody to visit her while she was alone. After his departure, his friend, Nong Sinri, finding her irresistible, managed to seduce her, and by cunningly giving her the false news of her husband's death, he had her acceptance to his marriage proposal. When Ukumavan returned, he found his friend with his wife. One look at both convinced him of their betrayal. In anger, he kicked Nong Sinri so hard that he ran to his place. After this, the war between the two friends began. With bows and arrows, they fought each other for 9 days. At last, Ukamavan was victorious over Unangsinri. Victory was his because his cause was just. Accordingly, being guilty in the eyes of Khasi law and morals, Nongsinri justly lost the war and lies today at the foot of the
Northeast Diary program, broadcast every Thursday at 5:30 p.m. brings very interesting and enchanting stories from the 8 Indian states of Northeast India.
His friend meets a
story. Don't forget to tune in.
Because he is guilty of a moral crime, namely adultery. And the legend makes an example of him to warn other potential offenders.
Ishwar mangaye, Ishwar mangaye, oh Ishwar, Brahman Pannu, Piyai Vannam.
Of the many forces of nature under the supreme reality called Ublai, it is earth whose abundance and grandeur remain unparalleled for the Khasi. As the sustainer of life, human as well as non-human, Mother Earth holds all in her lap. She is mother not only to man but also to the gods or the natural forces. In that sense, she is the source of the entire cosmos. The modernist isolation of man from other beings of the world would have appeared strange to the ancient tribesmen. According to him, trees, mountains, rivers, and of course animals play a crucial part in the life of the community. For instance, the crowing of the cock announces the arrival of the day. So also the dog not only offers man security, but is also sensitive to calamities such as floods, earthquakes, and impending death. The call of the cuckoo is related to the arrival of spring, the time of sowing of seeds of crops such as potato, paddy, etc. Even the tiny insect, the cricket, is significant, for it warned the Khasis of approaching enemies by making a noise. The list is endless, for each little non-human presence shares the life of the human by positively contributing to it. It is an irony of fate that while ecologists of all types are calling for a spiritual transformation that will give rise to an ecological sensibility which will make possible joyful relationships among people and with non-human beings, civilizations like that of the Khasi type who shared this joyful relationship is on the verge of collapse. There seems to be a re-evaluation and rethinking in today's society on a number of issues, said I.M. Simon, another Khasi intellectual. Conversion to Christianity, modern education, urbanization are a few of the carriers of change which have drastically altered the spiritual outlook of the Khasi's understanding of man, God, and nature. Modernization, with its emphasis on individual empowerment, has given men and women a new perspective about themselves and their sacred forests and Mother Earth.
And folks, now let's enjoy a Khasi New Year song by Bankar Karkhonger.
Kik tinil ya kuretuk, sen tem mai baso. To ai kik tinil ya kuretuk, sen tem mai baso. Happy, happy, happy new year. Happy, happy.
And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Northeast Diary. Join us again next week for more stories from this enchanting part of India. Until then, goodbye and a very happy new year.
This program was presented and produced by Vinita Thakur with assistance from Kumar Gaurav. It was brought to you by the News Services Division of Akashwani.